Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Wednesday, September 7th, 2022. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. These tools are available absolutely free through the tireless efforts of Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice. On the website at whyagain.org. If you go to that website and click on the Start Here link in the upper left-hand corner, it will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that particular chapter of the book contains a narrative description of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet, and it's a tool I've been using to great effect for a little over 18 years now to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships, and to turn any negative emotional experience I have into part of the infallible guidance system that each and every one of us has been given. You can also download the actual worksheet process itself. It's a simple PDF file. Click the link. Download it, print it off, copy it as often as you'd like, and use it over and over again absolutely free. You can also go to your app store and type in the three words Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. And before you're done typing the word forgiveness, you'll see the glowing heart icon. If you choose to tap on that, it will let you download a completely free and private app. And that app contains the Reality Management Worksheet, an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. We hope that people do all of that soon and often, because primarily it tends to improve the quality of people's lives when they tap into these tools and start using them actively in their life. And secondarily, because it tends to promote comments, questions, answers, testimonials, and if you have any of those to share with us, you can give us a call at 563-999-3581. If you call that number and press 1, it will put the icon of a hand by your phone number. I will turn on the microphone and announce you by your area code. Alternatively, you can send us an email. You can email Jeannie at jeannie@whyagain.org, or you can email me at tjh@mindshifters-academy.org, and we will address those comments or questions as we receive them on the internet show, and then as time allows, send you an email letting you know what day and time it was addressed so you can listen to the comments or the feedback. I'd just like to give a quick reminder to people that even if I'm in the middle of what seems to be a monologue or reading something from the Way of Mastery, we encourage and welcome people to call in and press 1 on their phone. I'll either turn the phone lines on immediately or wait till I feel it's an appropriate time for the flow of the show. And when people do that, it makes it far easier for us to live into our intention with this work, which is to be a service. So how can we be a service? What's on your mind? Yesterday when we ended the show, we had finished reading through Lesson 20 in the Way of Mastery, which is another way to talk about it is it's the second book of three books in the Way of Mastery series, the Way of the Heart, the Way of Transformation, and the Way of Knowing. And we've done the first seven lessons in the Way of Transformation from Lesson 13 through Lesson 20. And we have plenty of time for comments and questions and regrouping or refining what's being discussed. Essentially, in this last lesson, we've been encouraged to dramatically change the way we use our time and our mind energy, and observing our choices and continually choosing to focus our awareness and our observation on how we're actually creating our experience of life. The headings in the chapter or the lesson itself is titled Vigilance for the Kingdom. And the first heading in the chapter is What You Desire, You Experience. Almost instantaneously. And then the next heading is titled The Decision to Accept the Truth That Is True Always, which is every time you create an appearance, an experience of being separate, being lonely, being upset, being weak, being small, every time you create that experience for yourself, it's an illusion. It's not the truth of your being. It's hiding from you the truth of your being. What's the truth of your being? You remain as you were created to be. It is said in a number of different ways throughout this set of teachings. You and your creator remain eternally joined. You can't ever be separate from the forces of creation that gave rise to you. You can't ever be, in actuality, anything different than you were always created to be. And yet, with the power of creation that flows through you, you didn't create the power of creation, but you're given dominion over your mind, which is like a hose or a funnel, a channel that can be directed in one area or another, one direction or another, one pattern of thought or another. You're given dominion. You're given control over where you choose to point that very powerful, infinitely powerful creative force. That's what's behind the observation. What you desire, you experience. So what are you choosing to desire? What are you choosing to pour your mind energy into? What are you choosing to focus on and give value to? That's the next heading, observing your choices. And the next heading, the key to transformation is to assume complete responsibility for those choices, for where you're focusing your mind energy, for what you're giving yourself permission to pursue or value. So the first exercise is to observe your choices. Look well and see if there was a moment in which you were using the power of your mind to decide to feel lonely, to feel separate, to decide against the actuality that you are living from the kingdom, that the kingdom is within you. And when you find those moments that you've been choosing negative thoughts, just breathe and soften, look on it with innocence and simply say, oh, I could have chosen otherwise. Breathe and soften into the observation that the world as you experience it remains uncaused by anything outside of your own mind. And yet within your own mind, you're given complete dominion. And then there's a second observational exercise, which is take 10 minutes out of each hour. If you want, you can set alarms on your watches or your smartphones. And in those 10 minutes, just actually observe how you are moving your body around the planet. And learn to observe it in a way with complete neutrality, where you are vigilant against using words of judgment or contraction, and practicing that lets you seize the opportunity to discipline your mind, to train it, to draw out of it the essence of the Christ mind which exists within your mind. And I rarely present something on the show here that isn't actually free. But just as a point of interest, my sister, who is a person who is easily bored and by her own admission, hates repetition. She hates things that are repetitive. But she said to me the other day that she has listened to the audible of a particular book, I think she said at least 6 times now, and she keeps listening to it, and that's just baffled her. She doesn't have any recollection of ever reading anything as much as she's reading this book. And she thought I should know about it because she thinks that the teachings in the book are similar to what we talk about on the internet show and in the support groups. And so, you know, most of the time when I present something, it's either you can find it free on YouTube or you can go to christmind.info and read the entire book, et cetera, et cetera. Or I offer it free on the mindshiftersacademy.org website, or Michael and Jeannie offer it free on their website at whyagain.org. And I can't make this offer. I don't know how to give you access to this book absolutely free, so I'm not going to promote it in that way. I'm just going to say that here's a younger person who's written a book. It's quite successful. And there's like, so far I'm more than halfway through the book, and there's no mention of God, and yet it is exactly the same teachings. To my eye and ear, it's exactly the same teaching. The title of the book is The Illusion of Money, and it's written by Kyle Cease, C-E-A-S-E. And even though the word money is in the title, the subtitle is Why Chasing Money is Stopping You from Receiving It. If you read that book title and that subtitle, you would think that it's about money, but it's almost exactly the same teachings. It's about energy flow. It's about energy resonance. It's about living into your full potential and your creativity and your ability to choose the focus of your mind energy and your ability to practice your pattern of thought and the creation of emotions. And the power of attraction within an energy that you let resonate deeply within yourself, especially if it's an emotional energy. And the book is amazingly similar to The Way of Mastery and The Course in Miracles and the Guy Finley work. And the Dr. Joe Dispenza work and Bruce Lipton's work, and of course he cites a number of those different people, and yet he's got a quirky little way of talking about it, and he writes with a bit of humor. And so the essence of it is not that you need to go get another book. The essence of it is that depending upon your style and your propensity for taking things in from a slightly different perspective, it might be of benefit. However, he talks about it very, very clearly. If you read that book, it doesn't help you at all. If you do the exercises that they talk about in the book, you can transform your life. It's, again, almost identical to the message in The Way of Mastery. This is why we're reading The Way of Mastery and going so slowly and doing commentary, is to leave the space open for people to actually practice. To practice with the exercises, to practice with the tools, to practice adopting a different perspective in their own life, to practice using time wisely, using time differently, to practice becoming aware of the resistance and the judging as it manifests in your life, and take the time to observe what is the consequence, what are the effects of me being in judgment, what is the benefit to me if I allow myself to move with the flow. The flow of life itself, the flow of events. And, you know, I was talking about somebody that I had in the office yesterday who had, he's, you know, quite near 80 years old, and he was really enjoying the conversation, really enjoying the tools that we proposed, and then he said, but don't you think that all these problems in the world are being caused because of overpopulation? And his entire demeanor changed. His face tightened, his brow furrowed, his breathing pattern changed. Just because he started talking about how the root of all our problems in our culture comes down to there's just too darn many people on the planet right now. And I called him to just notice what he was doing in his physical body energy system as he poured his mind energy into the thought, there are just too darn many people on the planet, and that's causing all of the wars, and that's causing the depletion of the non-renewable energy sources, etc. And as I called his attention to it, he softened. He chose to breathe and soften. He chose to shift the focus of his energy, and it was a powerful demonstration. Well, I just finished another session where a woman came in and she was highly agitated at the beginning of the session. She's a nurse, and she has a teenage son. And since our last session, she was driving in her car, and she saw an accident, and she stopped. And here was a 20-year-old who had been driving, and another 20-year-old who was his passenger. And they had done nothing wrong, but they were involved in an accident that took the life of the passenger. And when she pulled over and went to help, they were still trapped in the car, and there weren't any other police or fire people there. And she was there at this critical time when these two 20-year-olds were trapped in a car, and one mortally wounded and the other severely wounded. And she was shaking as she was talking about it, and she was trembling and crying and shaking as she told me about the aftermath and going to the hospital. And, you know, she knew that they were going to the hospital where she worked, and she made calls, and she's tried to help people with this and that. And she's tried to connect with the family of the driver who survived. And she was agitated and upset and crying as she talked about it. And I did what I usually do in a session. I'll let her talk for a while, and then I encouraged her to keep talking and to breathe in the way that we know helps calm the body, to comfortably fill the lungs, hold it at the top of the inhale for 2 or 3 seconds, and then exhale in a way that resists the exhale. So it's a nice, long, slow exhale. And as she did that for 2 breaths, then she commented, "I didn't even realize how ramped up I was getting." And then she went on and talked about a number of other things and how this impact of this event is now spilling over into her interactions with her own senior in high school, and how she's concerned that she's not going to be able to be, how would you say, that she's not going to be able to relate to her son the way she'd like to, because she's going to be relating from this fear that that could happen to him, and this is so traumatic. And so a little bit later on, when she talked about several other things that have been upsetting in the past few weeks since she's been here, we came back to this, and as soon as we started talking about, she mentioned the accident again, she started to get agitated again. And I just suggested, and we'll do some more trauma energy work around this specific trauma. There's some very good techniques that people have developed over the years that can help her release the effects of this trauma and this shock to her system and the very intense things that she saw and experienced. But in the beginning, in the session, I just suggested that she take a breath or two, like we talked about earlier in the session, slow the exhale down, and she choose the focus of a filter to put on this situation that says how fortunate they all were that she just happened to be driving by at that time, that she was one of 3 people who stopped and responded, who were gentle and nurturing and comforting to these 2 young men in their time of need. And as she took a breath and heard my words, everything changed about her demeanor and her facial expression, and she softened, and she released some tears of release and somewhat gratification, and she said she has thought about that, and she's thought about what a blessing she was able to be to the family of the boy who survived. And just that shift in mind energy, just that choice of a filter, nothing changed in terms of the event that happened. And yet, day after day, I get to see in my own life and in the lives of patients in my office, when I choose the focus of my mind energy that leads to a thought of gratitude, an appreciation, an acceptance, an allowance, and a surrender, I get an entirely different physical energetic experience than when I choose a focus for my mind energy that leads to anger or bitterness or hurt or resentment or fear. And that's what the Way of Mastery is calling us to do, to take 100% responsibility to observe what are the choices we're making, how are we creating the interpretations that are creating our experience of life, what are we choosing to desire and focus on, how is that creating our experience of life, how are we hiding from ourselves the truth of our nature as being always, instantly, constantly connected to our source, how can we move into taking complete responsibility, which is the key to transformation, complete responsibility not for the car accident we witnessed, but for what we make it mean, for the filter we choose to apply to it, to the focus of our mind energy for any life event, whether we label it glorious or gut-wrenching, whether we label it exquisite or excruciating. The Way of Mastery is asking us to seize the opportunity to discipline our minds, to train ourselves to do more consciously what we have always done without that awareness. As we choose, so we experience. Guy Finley's phrase for it is, as goes my attention, so comes my experience. My way of talking about it is you have the infinite capacity to choose the focus of your conscious awareness in each new present moment. And it is the choice of your conscious awareness in each new present moment which actually creates your experience of life in that moment, nothing else. What this means is you are an infinitely powerful creator. Whether you realize it or not, you are actively creating your experience of life by how you're choosing to interpret and respond to life events, and that is the only factor creating your experience of life in truth, at the highest levels of truth. And as the book that I referenced earlier says, this book is not going to help you if you read it over and over and over again. And yet, if you do the exercises in this book, it can transform your life. Very much the same thing can be said about the Way of Mastery, which is why we're going so slowly, why we're breaking off into commentary. We are hopeful that we are giving people the space to go deeper into the truths that are being examined in this work and to take the time to practice using your time differently, using your mind energy differently. Taking 100% responsibility for how you choose to focus your attention in each new present moment. Taking time to understand that as goes your attention, so comes your experience. So our call-in number is 563-999-3581. If you call that number and press 1, we can have a conversation. How are you feeling about the Way of Mastery in the first 20 lessons? We've already mentioned, and I've given a little prelude of it. The next lesson begins with what Michael Rice would call a list of 9 mind shifters. And the exercise that begins that lesson is just that. And the only difference between the exercise that's recommended and Dr. Rice's mind shifter is, and Dr. Rice says, take an hour or two to respond to the mind shifter. And this work says, put a mind shifter at the top of a piece of paper all week long. Every time you think about it, give yourself time to respond to it and react. Why would we do that? Because we want to stir up what is in our consciousness that we have either temporarily forgotten or we're actively working to hide from ourselves. The idea is, as Paramahansa Yogananda would say, there is only consciousness. You are consciousness. The thought that I've divided my consciousness up into conscious, subconscious, and unconscious is just semantics. Paramahansa Yogananda would say, there is only the consciousness that I'm willing to look at and the consciousness that I'm not willing to look at, the consciousness I turn away from. This is where we have thoughts about things like the light that shines in the darkness, the light of awareness that shines in the darkness. Well, what's the darkness? Is it some evil force? No, it's just where the light isn't shining. Dale Allen Hoffman came to town, and among many of the things that he did, he said, let me ask you a question. What do we call that that part of the moon where the sun doesn't shine? A number of people, you know, offered up the dark side of the moon. And then Dale said, okay, but that was a trick question because the sun doesn't refuse to shine. There's a part of the moon that's turned away from the sun. The sun is always shining. The light is there. And darkness is not this active evil thing. It is the lack of awareness. It's the lack of, it's the turning away from the light. Bring the light of your awareness to every part of your consciousness, and you will have liberty. You will have the truth that sets you free. Well, how do I do that? Well, you can use a mind shifter tool. Dr. Michael Rice presents the mind shifter list. 3 groups of 13 statements, 39 in total. It's available on the whyagain.org website. It's one of the many worksheets you can download for free, print out. And just clear your mind and ask to be guided and pick a number from 1 to 3. And then clear your mind and ask to be guided and pick a number from 1 to 13. And let's say that you end up with the number 2 and the number 9. So then you go to the second set of 13 statements and you go to number 9 in that second set, and there's your statement. Write that statement on the left side of a sheet of paper. Draw a line vertically down the paper about a third of the way across. And give yourself a couple of hours to sit and free associate or respond to or argue against the statement that is now written on the left side of your sheet of paper. Why would you do that? Why would you take an hour or two of your time? Because every time you write that statement, you add energy to everything in you, in your consciousness, whether it's hidden from you or not, that would want to argue against that statement. So this is literally a way to stir the pot. This is a way to add energy to the parts of your mind that you're actively hiding from yourself until they burst out of the hiding, out of the darkness, out of the restrictions you've placed on that part of your mind. And they spill out on the page where you can see them actively, consciously, literally in the moment. Why would I do that? Because once it's out here active and conscious, I can work with it. Michael Rice used to say this more often. He used to say, the strongest resonant frequency in your energy system that you are not aware of will be the thing that drives your behavior. This is about bias. This is about prejudice. This is about those things that we try to deny. Oh, I love everybody. Oh, all I want is to be next to God and creation. I just want to be a good person. And that's one part of my mind. I absolutely believe it when people say that, that there's a part of their mind that wants that. I also understand that for each and every one of us, unless we have reached that permanent state of enlightenment, which for most great teachers I know understand is a myth, all of us have parts of our mind that would argue against all I want is love. All I want is to be close to God and creation. Well, how can I get access to it? I can use a tool like the Mind Shifter tool. I can use a tool like they're going to present in Chapter 21 of The Way of Mastery. I can make a statement about what I want and repeat it over and over again in the space where I've cleared some time in my schedule, so I've got an hour or more to free associate to this. And every time I write that statement that says, I only want love and God, and I only want to be connected to all creation, and I only want to be a loving presence, every time I write that statement, it's going to add energy to the fearful parts of my mind that hold a different belief, a different set of conclusions, a different set of trauma energies. And as they get energy added to them, they eventually burst through the restrictions I have placed on my awareness, and they spill out on the page, and now I can start addressing them. Now I can start actively working to either dismantle them or to address the needs that are expressed in that thought pattern or statement or belief system, address them differently in a more productive way. And there are a number of people that understand that this is important. I can hold a set of fearful conclusions in my mind, and I can be hiding them from my conscious awareness because they're too intense and they're too fearful. But every time they get activated and they start resonating and they become stronger than my conscious awareness, they drive my behavior. And that is not a very useful way to go through life. That is a way that's guaranteed to amplify my suffering, my mental and emotional suffering. And literally everything about the Course in Miracles and the Way of Mastery is trying to present to us a set of tools that we can actively use, we can learn about and then practice and then actively use to minimize our suffering, to actually dismantle our suffering. Last night in the support group, we had a discussion after we were listening to some of the Michael Singer book, and a suggestion was made, and immediately as the suggestion was made, one of our group members said, but that would mean this, and that would be a horrible way to live. And of course, that would mean this is just what her mind is holding. There's nothing in any of this work, whether it's Michael Singer's work or The Course in Miracles or The Way of Mastery, that would set somebody up to create misery in their life. And yet, in this woman's mind, in the instant a suggestion was made, that was just as neutral as can be. It's focus on what you have control over, you know, work to make that better, to be the presence of love or whatever, and let other people do what they choose to do. Immediately, what that resonated in her mind was that would mean complete loss of contact and isolation and misery and the relationship loss and whatever it was. And, of course, it only means that in her mind when these thoughts are resonating just this way. And the trick of working with this kind of work and with people who are triggered that way is to help bring their awareness to the fact that that conclusion about doom and gloom and ultimate mess is not happening anywhere in the world right now than in their own mind. And as long as that conclusion is activated, that intense fear about this negative outcome is resonating within her, that's going to be the thing that drives her behavior. What's it going to drive her to do? Everything she can think of to get the opposite to happen. How many times can you just take a wild guess? How many times has she been working in her life to get the opposite to happen? Countless times. And yet here we are still, where she's absolutely terrified that what has been happening is going to keep continuing. And then she keeps continuing her efforts to make it change, and it keeps staying the same. The more they work to change it, the more it stays the same. How does that happen? Because we become part of a pattern that we're too close to see, and we don't get to see how the very thing we think we're doing to make our pain go away is the source of our pain. It's exactly what David Bohm would call sustained incoherence, and it's written in Michael Rice's current version of the 7-step worksheet process. It's exactly what Guy Finley talks about when he says, the mind only stops once it wakes up and realizes that it is the source of its pain, not the solution to its pain. So in a situation where a parent wants more contact with his or her adult children, and they send text messages and phone calls and emails, and they send gift cards, and they invite themselves for a trip, and they invite that their adult children and their grandchildren to come with them here, the more they do that, the more they meet resistance, the more their access to their children and grandchildren is restricted, and the harder they try to increase their access. And without realizing it, we often engage in behaviors, in thoughts, in behaviors, in actions, in words, which perpetuate our pain rather than relieve our pain. And that's exactly what David Bohm is referring to when he uses the term sustained incoherence. And that's what lesson 20 is trying to get us to do. Slow down and observe. Let's back this up. Let's come right back to the critical point on page 5 of the very first axiom in this work. It says, nothing that you experience is caused by anything outside of you. You experience only the effects of your own choice. Lesson 20, vigilance for the kingdom. What you desire, you experience. This is like the first lesson's message on steroids. What thoughts are currently taking place within my mind? How am I perceiving the world that seems to be around my body? How am I perceiving myself in this moment? As I ask that, it gets revealed to me, because it is those things I am choosing and perceiving and pouring my mind energy into which create my experience. You are the extension of that creative energy in form. You have that power in your mind energy to create your experience moment to moment. You have the infinite power to create whatever you choose to experience. And we've been trained in our culture and through our life experience to create images of ourselves as weak and small and separate and lonely and isolated and ineffective and betrayed and abandoned, etc. And so the next heading in the lesson says, please, wake up to the fact that you are making a decision. And you can decide to reject, or you can decide to accept the truth that is true always. But that truth that is true always is that you and your Creator are one, always connected, and that the Christ mind is in you, and you can access conscious awareness of it and then extend it in every interaction you have. You can ask yourself moment to moment, how would Christ live in this dimension? How would a Christ bring him or herself to each moment of experience? What voice would Christ listen to? What vision would he or she serve? And as you start asking those questions and staying open and listening only for the true answer from within you, when it comes, when you tap into it, how will I know it's a true answer? You will feel a calm certainty. There won't be any of this anxiety. I wonder if I'm listening to the wrong voice. I wonder if this is ego. I wonder if this is truly the Christ mind. When you're listening to the true voice inside, there's a calm certainty. There's a rooted, firm, rooted center that you feel the strength of. And when you do that and you practice that enough, this lesson tells us your mind will shift to the point where you will remember that everything you are seeing is a passing illusion. And the purpose and the meaning you had given those things just dissolves and drops away. And you wonder things like, where did the world go? I used to think this was a fearful place. I used to think I had to get ahead. I used to think that there were those who could victimize me. And now as I look around me, all I see is harmlessness. I see nothing out there that can add anything of value to me. I see nothing out there that can take the true value of me away from me. I'm simply at rest and at peace. I'm delighting at play in the Creator's kingdom. And where I am, Christ abides. How do you get there? You get there by observing your choices. You get there by choosing to assume 100% responsibility for what you're doing with your mind energy. You get there by observing that you are only having an experience because you've chosen certain activities and thoughts and interpretations in your life that have brought you to this moment. And maybe you choose to do the second exercise, which is to take 10 minutes every hour and just learn to observe. Oh, here I am moving my body toward the car. Oh, here I am starting the car and putting it in gear and backing up and watching carefully the parking area around me. Here I am sitting on a park bench. Here I am talking into my cell phone. Here I am about to walk into a restaurant and order some food. And it strongly encourages us to learn to do that level of observation as purely and without judgment, in strict and complete, straight, clear observation as possible. I'm not doing this because so-and-so said a mean word to me, and that's why I'm yelling. I'm not doing this because I have to get in my car and I have to hurry up to get to work on time so I can make enough money to pay the rent. I'm not doing this because of anything. The exercise that we're encouraged to do in this lesson is to learn to observe the way a camera would take a picture or a recorder would record the sound, and there is no judgment. There is no labeling. There is no attribution of cause. There is simply the description of what is happening. This is to help me sharpen my powers of observation, and this is to help me awaken to all of the times and ways that I judge and I constrict and I contract from the flow of life. And the more I can awaken to that, the more I can see how it's connected to the consequences that I don't like, and the easier it is for me to put it down, to just let it go, to let it all go. And as I do that, I learn to discipline the mind. I learn to drop the judgments. I learn to be as the Christ mind, which allows all things, accepts all things, embraces all things, trusts all things, and that's the only way it can transcend all things. So, that's our review, kind of an overview review of Lesson 20. And we've got about 5 minutes left for comments, questions, answers, soliloquies, curiosities, fun stories. Or I can move ahead and start the second hour, which is going to be a recording because Michael and Jeannie have had something come up in their schedule today. Call-in number is 563-999-3581. If you call that number and press 1, we can have a brief conversation. How is this landing for you? What's on your mind? What would be something we could say or do that may be of service to you in the last 5 minutes of our show on this lovely Wednesday, September 7th. I'll just take a moment to remind people that we have an opportunity for a support group that happens each Tuesday and Thursday evening. And tomorrow will be another one from 6:30 to 9 p.m. Central. All the information you need to join is available at mindshiftersacademy.org website. Please remember there's a separate login code for Tuesdays and for Thursdays on two separate pages on that website. And since no one has a question or comment, I will remind us all that we come from love. We're made of the stuff we call love. We actually are love. Everything else is false. And this is your second hour.
What exists is energy in form. And relative to this integrated energy system that we call a body-mind unit, there are two qualities. There's integrative energy, that which is over on the left side of the board, and disintegrative energy, that which is over here on the right side of the board. Now, we've had the experience over the last 2 years. Our granddaughter came into the world just a little over 2 years ago. And, you know, it was this little baby, little structure. And you know something? She doesn't look like that at all today, 2 years later. And she doesn't look at all like she looked at a month or 2 months or 3 months or 4 months or 5 or 6 or 10 or 20. And what you have to conclude, if you get out of the dullness of incapacitated perception, what you notice is this form is a piece of plastic. It's in a state of becoming, and it becomes according to the energetic patterns in which we engage. If we engage in these things on the right side of the board, hostility and fear, grief, rage, anger, sadness, jealousy, revenge, then we're continuously putting into the cells that are storing that particular energy, and my offering is that every cell in your structure functions as a brain cell, functions to store information. And so we're literally changing the plastic nature of every cell and overall the whole structure of this thing we call a body-mind unit. And we're laying that on top of, you know, we can't just step in, or at least normally, I think we get to a level of power where we might be able to, but we don't just step in and make an instant change in a whole structure. Why? Well, there are 1,000 generations of that mind energy becoming flesh within each of our structures. You know, we don't have to direct its becoming, it's happening. But as we grow in awareness and choose to engage in energetic patterns, we start to direct its becoming. This side of the board, we direct it into the disease process. This side of the board, we direct it into health and wholeness and higher states of being. And if we lived on a planet where 7.5 people woke up every morning, 7.5 billion people, pardon me, woke up every morning realizing that this is who they are, how different would our creative process be? If we didn't have people playing these games, if we weren't playing these games, how different would this piece of plastic look for each of us? What would it be capable of? And as I say, when we engage in that mind energy and it lands on the cell, that mind energy, when it's of a disintegrative nature, the cell says, ouch, it informs us that the quality of our creative process is off base. But what do we do? Well, what our culture has taught most of us to do is blame somebody else for that. Have you ever said this to somebody? You made me really mad. You hurt me. You really have a problem. You ever said that to somebody? And the question I like to ask is, if they're the one with the problem, why are you the one with the pain? That doesn't make any sense. If they're the one with the problem, they'd be the one with the pain. But if you're in pain and you think somebody else has got a problem, you've got a problem. Now, we have a definition for the act of thinking or speaking as though something outside of you is causing what's happening inside of you. And that's called denial. So denial is the act of thinking or speaking as though something outside of us is causing something inside of us to happen. Now, something outside of us can cause something that's inside of us to move or intensify in its movement, but it can't cause that energy to be there. It has to be there in the first place. But when we live in this game of denial, you know, whenever I feel this way, I talk about them or somebody or anybody. What happens is that in order to pretend that my feelings aren't coming from the interaction of my mind energy and my cells, I have to hide that whole process from myself. I literally have to dissociate from that process. And I have to hallucinate, I have to generate a worldview, a perceptual construct that tells me that the problem is really out there. And of course, one of my favorite tongue-in-cheek lines, which many of you have used many times, is, if you've been through it 87 different times with 42 different people, how is it that you're the only one that was there every time? Sooner or later, we have to acknowledge that we're engaged in our own lives. But if we spend our whole lives in denial, you made me mad, you made me sad, you made me angry, you hurt me, that upset me, they disturbed me, then we have a device called a mind that continuously constructs the world we see as though that was true. And what that means is that the real cause of what we're experiencing, we have to dissociate from. And if you were involved in this work back in the early days, you remember that I used to write on the board, deny, suppress. And then, and it totally changed the work when I was given this instruction. I mean, I had specific instructions that were given internally from Ruka that said, Michael, no, it's not suppress. It's not merely hiding something from yourself. It's locking it away and throwing away the key. Once you're in an arena where you're in denial, you made me mad, your mad is no longer yours to change. So guess what? You now have a life sentence of mad. Anybody and everybody that will can trigger that into activity can seem to make you mad. Why can they make you mad? Because mad is there. And if mad is there, it's an energy. And if you pushed it down 1,000 times, there's a very intense high energy wave radiating out from you that says to all the world on an energetic level, hey world, is there anybody that knows how to make me mad? Have you ever noticed there's never a shortage of volunteers? Why is that? Because life abhors you being diseased. Life doesn't want you dead. So life has been structured, it seems, so that if you are holding to a dis-ease energy and you've dissociated from it, someone's going to show up. And that happens through the law of resonance. Someone is going to receive the energetic invitation to come to your life and do to you exactly what you never wanted to have done. And if you tell them what's wrong with them and you get rid of them and you go away and you take the geographic cure, you'll find somebody else and somebody else and somebody else. I feel so blessed the universe reserved the title of my book for me. Why is this happening to me again? Because virtually everybody in the universe has asked the question. And, you know, probably the greatest atrocity done to us as human beings down through the ages and that we've bought into is that we've had hidden from us the fact that we are by nature creators. Nobody told us that. They told us all kinds of crazy things, but they didn't tell us that through the energetic patterns we engage in, we create our own cellular health and diseases. We create everything that shows up. We literally create the way this piece of plastic called a body-mind unit unfolds and becomes either toward disease or toward health. It depends on what the predominant resonant energy is in your structure. So for people who live in this state of denial, this state where it's all everybody else's fault, they hold all of these causes within themselves, but they press those causes down, hide them from themselves, and by so doing, intensify them every time they have to press it down, and therefore send out a signal that gets even stronger and stronger and stronger. You know, imagine that I've got a 3-foot diameter spring. It sits here on the floor and it stands 3 feet high. Can that spring do anything sitting there on the floor? Not at all. But what happens if I push down on it and lock it? And I push down on it and lock it. And I push down on it and lock it. What happens after years of doing that? And I let the lock off. Whew, a lot of power stored in the spring. If I've been spending years and years and years telling everybody else why they're the problem in my life, I'm pushing down that energy, adding energy and information to it, and by so doing, I'm setting up literally an attractive energy field that will resonate or pull somebody into my life to do it to me again. So when I live life that way, when that's the game that I play, the things that I most don't want to deal with are literally stored in brain cells. When I talk about building brain cells in this work, I'm not talking about building new physical structure. I'm talking about the fact that every cell in the structure is designed to store information, literally to store frequencies. So every cell can hold energetic patterns and therefore function as a brain cell. When there are certain brain cells that I don't want to deal with, things that I'm in denial about, I push those things down and hide them. I intensify them, and by so doing, I set up a high energy wave. Now, I didn't know at the time how important a piece of information this was going to be way back, and this goes back probably 35 or 36 years ago. I used to keynote at a conference called Global Science out in Colorado. And one year, a gentleman named Marcel Vogel came to the conference. Marcel was a 23-year senior scientist from IBM. He was the only non-degreed scientist that IBM ever had on their payroll. And the reason he was non-degreed was because he was self-educated and nobody could teach him anything. At the age of 11, Marcel invented chemical light. You know, you go to a football game and they've got these light sticks and you break the glass tubes inside the plastic and the chemicals mix and they light up. Well, that was Marcel's invention. He invented that at 11. His family didn't have the money. Marcel patented it himself. If your computer works, guess why? Marcel invented the magnetic coating on the plates of your hard drive that allows your hard drive to store information. That's the kind of mind that Marcel had. And what he did this particular year is he brought a thing called a Delaware camera. It was created by a man out of England named George Delaware. This camera is a little different than your average camera. Normally, you click the shutter, the aperture opens, light energy comes in, it's registered on the photographic plate, you develop it, you've got a picture. Not so with the Delaware camera. In between the aperture and the photographic plate, there's a tuning mechanism. So you can literally tune the camera, somewhat like a TV set or a radio, as to what frequencies it receives. And so what Marcel was able to do with this camera was he was able to attune it to the frequency of waves that leave the mind when we think a thought. And what Marcel was able to do was to take pictures of the high-energy waves that leave the mind when we think a thought. So whatever we're holding in the way of mind energy within our structures, from our own lives or from our genes, we're literally sending out a composite of frequencies continuously. And because the universe is governed by the law of resonance, now, the law of resonance, simply stated, says this. When two energy systems are in tune or in harmony with each other, there's an interchange of energy between them when one system is amplified above the other. You probably remember from physics class in high school. You took a middle C tuning fork, you hit it on a desk, and you put it in front of a second middle C tuning fork. The second middle C tuning fork was not moving. But when you put the first energized tuning fork in front of it, the second tuning fork started to move. It's called resonance, transfer of information. So notice that this tuning fork is moving, and through resonance, that one starts to move. Resonance creates motion. You might think about let's imagine you've got a baby grand piano, and you have two of them, and you open the top of the two baby grand pianos. Now there are hundreds and hundreds of keys in each piano. But if I go over to one of those pianos and I hit the middle C and I go look into the second piano, there are going to be a bunch of strings vibrating in that second piano. Guess which ones? Only the ones that are keyed to middle C are going to be moving in that second piano. So resonance creates motion. Now, in the human realm, my offering is, resonance adds another piece to the puzzle, and that is, resonance creates motion toward. So, you know, I hit middle C on this piano. The other piano isn't going to get up and crawl up on top of it. It's not going to create motion toward. But in the human realm, when I set up a frequency, those who are in resonance with that frequency are going to tend to be drawn into my space. And if there's something that I have denied and dissociated from, 1,000 times, and it's deeply hidden away in the darkest recesses of my mind, I don't even know it's there, but having pushed it down 1,000 times, it's got a pretty powerful wave coming out of it. Now, if this person has the matching bag of garbage, if this person has the brain cells and the behaviors that match what I've denied and dissociated from, unless they are very conscious, they will tend to be directed by that energy wave. That energy wave will resonate these brain cells in them. Those brain cells will fire, constitute their, what they would call their conscious thought and behavior, and they're going to tend to do a behavior toward us. Guess what the behavior is likely going to be? Let's see if that's true. Has anybody ever gone into somebody's space totally committed to being loving, nurturing and caring, and all of a sudden found yourself functioning like a mad banshee? What happened? Well, here's my offering. You went in totally committed to being loving and nurturing and caring, but their high energy wave set something else in motion in you. It resonated your mad banshee. And when your mad banshee started to move, that took over your behavior, and there you were doing it to them again. That's how the why is this happening to me again principle occurs. And guess what? Even if you didn't do it, they're going to see you do it. Well, Michael, that doesn't make any sense. Oh, yeah, it does when you know how the mind operates. Because here's what's going to happen. When they do that behavior, when they bounce off of that high energy wave in you and do that behavior, they're going to resonate those very brain cells that you've denied and dissociated from. When those brain cells start to fire, they're going to create a perceptual construct that will be projected from those brain cells, and you're going to show up in their mind. Literally, they will see a body that they call you in their mind with and made up of the threads of energy of what you denied and dissociated from. So they're going to show up in your mind with your problem with that. You're going to see that it's their problem. It's going to be really clear to you. But then notice, you've been through it 87 different times with 42 different people, and you're the only one that was there every time. This is an internal process that comes about as a result of denial and dissociation. So what happens when we deny and dissociate? This is the energetic pattern that occurs. And then when those brain cells fire, and we live in a culture, you know, psychology tends to tell us that projection is taking something that's inside of you and putting it outside of you. That's not projection. That's externalization. Projection is when I take brain cells I've denied and dissociated from and I generate perception out of it. I generate the picture world that I see. Now, it's interesting, and of course we've been teaching this for decades, but a couple of years ago, I don't know, maybe 4 or 5 years ago now, we came across some research that was done by the CIA. If you go to CIA.gov, you can download a book. God knows how many taxpayer dollars they spent on it. It was called The Study of Human Intelligence. And there's a chapter in it on perception. They're studying how perception works. And here's their bottom line conclusion. You can go to the CIA website and download this book free. What it says is, the mind does not record reality. The mind generates reality. This perceptual world, the world that you see, is a generated world. And as a generated world, it is a construct of your mind. And until you interrupt what's at the root of the way your mind constructs the world that you see, you will tend to be stuck in this pattern of denial, dissociation, and then projection. Now, our culture tells us that we have a pair of windows that we all get to look out of and see what's going on in the world. That is probably the biggest lie you've ever been told. You do not have a set of windows that look out into the world. It's not possible. You have an antenna. It's called the eye. It's a frequency receiving device. It receives frequencies based in light energy. Light energy enters the eye, and through the law of resonance, the information that comes in through the eye resonates brain cells. And brain cells generate perception, the world you see. You can't look out through this antenna. All the eye is, as the other senses are simply frequency receivers. They're just receivers of energy. And whatever energy you have brain cells for, whatever brain cells it resonates in you, the brain, the mind, distinguish between those two because the mind functions through every cell in the body, the mind generates this perception. And it's interesting, there's some Harvard research that says that in a time frame where 10,000 brain cells fire, that is, there are 10,000 measurable units of electrical activity going on within this structure. In that time frame, which is about a 25th of a second, the max amount of data that goes into building your perceptual world is 9 bits. That's it. You get to see 9 bits out of 10,000 brain cells firing. And it's been estimated that the actuality of the world perhaps contains as much as 20 trillion bits in that same time frame. So we're looking at a tiny, tiny fragment of what's actually happening in the world and a tiny fragment of what's going on within our minds. Now, when you get down to that, what you call this sort of a device is an evidential device. When you're only looking at 9 bits of data out of 10,000 brain cells firing, you're looking at evidence. There are no facts there. There is only evidence. And there's a device, or there's a function in the mind called a bias. And, you know, in electronics, if you've got a, let's say you want to, you've got a transistor, and that transistor is designed to pass a certain frequency. You have to apply a voltage to it that allows that to pass. Well, it's pretty much the same here. You have to apply a willingness to have certain evidence present itself. And so that bias that is what's contained in literally our whole generational pattern. And as a result, the only evidence we ever get to see is evidence of our own BS. And of course, that's belief system. Anybody else have a different reality for those initials? If you have a different reality for those initials, I'll invite you to notice that's your reality. It's not mine. It's a belief system. I've had people who got, you know, upset with me for writing the initials BS on the board. And notice that they weren't upset because of my meaning, my reality, my perceptual construct for BS, belief system. They were upset and disturbed by a perceptual construct in their minds for those initials. Yeah. All upset is internal. You can't be upset unless you have an upsetting energy within yourself. And if you live in denial, they upset me, then dissociating from that upset, you will project it into your brain's image of someone else, and, you know, an endless procession of people will show up being the problem in your life. But you're the only one that was there every time. And when you understand that, these eyes don't see out there, but the world you see is generated from the firing of brain cells within you. Dr. Tim introduced a video by a gentleman, and take a look on, you know, you can go into YouTube and search for Anil Seth, A-N-I-L-S-E-T-H. And he does a beautiful presentation where he informs us that the brain doesn't see light and the brain doesn't hear sounds. No such thing happens. The brain, the perceptual system, is constantly making its best guess about what's going on out there. When you realize that's how your perceptual system works, then, and you realize that perception has a quality, you got to have a standard by which to measure the perceptions you're going to accept and the ones you aren't. There is a sign within your structure that will tell you 100% of the time when your perception is off base. And that is your perception fueled by either hostility or fear? Ever asked earlier, anybody ever accuse you of doing something you've never done or saying something you've never said? You know, most everybody in an audience will raise their hand, you know, kind of a laugh. Yeah, I sure have. Take a moment and think about Any time in your life where somebody's done that kind of accusation and they were not correct, what state of mind were they in when they accused you of saying something you never said and doing something you never did, even though they swear they saw you do it? I guarantee it's always hostility and fear.
Yep.
Now, probably that makes sense to you when you're looking at other people, but notice that you still have a tendency to trust your mind when it's doing hostility and fear. Hostility and fear are indicators that the mind is using corrupt data to build the world that you see. If you come from generations and generations and generations of hostility and fear-based perception, then it seems like that's the only thing possible is perceptions based in that. But the mind does not record reality. The mind generates reality. If your mind is generating your reality out of hostility or fear, and remember, this is reality. The perceptual output of the mind is your reality. And what's going on in the world, this 20 trillion bit world, is actuality. When you can let the actuality come in and teach you, well, what are you going to have to do to be able to do that? You're going to have to make a space for it to happen. You're going to have to collapse this projection. Guess what forgiveness does? Is forgiveness about letting other people off the hook because pain or trauma is moving in you? Forget it. Never forgive anybody for anything. And many people say, oh, yeah, that's right, I have to forgive myself. Never forgive yourself for anything because you can't. It's not possible. What the Greeks taught us was to let other people off the hook. They taught us pardoning in place of forgiveness and totally bastardized the idea of forgiveness. Forgiveness is the tool with which you collapse perceptions based in hostility and fear, and you leave a clean and open space within your mind for something based in active love to come forward. And when that happens, then what enters into and what fuels the human mind is this state of being that we are designed to function out of. And this physiological device becomes a home where love is incarnated and embodied, and it fuels absolutely everything. So the key tool that's needed, if you recognize that your life has any given arenas, you know, it might be in the arena of relationships or money or business or work or employers, employees, whatever arena it's in, if you find yourself, your mind producing hostility and fear, your job, should you choose to accept it, is to weaken those frequencies of hostility and fear until they can no longer take over your perceptual system. Now, each of us has an innate tendency to perceive life in a certain way. That's because we have generational patterns. Remember we talked about there's integrative energy, there's disintegrative energy. Interesting, in the Aramaic language, the word that describes disintegrative energy is sin. It's an interesting word in Aramaic. The word sin has nothing to do with some terrible, awful thing that you've done. The word sin in Aramaic is actually an archery term. When you picked up the bow and arrow and you fired at the bullseye and you missed the bullseye, the scorekeeper yelled sin. All it means is you're off the mark. That's all it means. And if I put an energy that's off the mark, some form of hostility or fear, into a cell, I begin the degradation of that cell. Now let's go back to the Aramaic way where they informed us, the wages of sin is death. Now, I can remember being a kid and thinking, oh, God's going to get me for my sins. That was what I was taught. You're going to be punished for your sins. And here we live on the punishment plan. How common is that belief? What if we lived on a planet where 7.5 billion people could not even conceive of punishment, let alone reach out in punishment? What if we had 7.5 people who simply functioned as love and punishment never entered their awareness in any way, shape, or form? How different would our world be? I'm offering a worldview that that's possible, and that's where we want to go with this work. So when they say the wages of sin is death, all they were saying is, if you put disintegrative energy on top of disintegrative energy on top of, on top of, on top of, you're going to die. Your structure isn't going to be able to carry that burden. Literally, mind energy becoming flesh, that chemistry that we call it that lands inside the cell is going to create deterioration of the cell. You get enough cells deteriorating, you get an organ system failing. You get enough organ systems failing and you die. Life can't be supported in a system that is filled with sin. And it's got no connotation of, you know, evil, bad, wrong, nasty. It's just, what quality of energy are you engaging in? And then you remember they said, the sins of the fathers will be passed, yea, unto 3 and 4 generations. This is straight out of scripture, and guess what? It's got nothing to do with religion. It's just the way the system works. It's interesting. I came across this morning some emails from a friend from several years ago, and I'd sent him some of the material on the Beatitudes and the Kabbalah's manuscript, and he passed it on to a friend of his, business acquaintance. And I just read it this morning, and this fellow was Jewish, and he was putting forward some of Yeshua's ideas in Aramaic, these kinds of ideas. And this guy, this executive from a company he was working with, sent back, he says, what, you and Jew are talking about Jesus? I'm going to have to sit down and have a few shots of tequila before I read this. Because our world's been brainwashed that this is about religion. And that's just another scam to keep people separated and finding somebody else at fault and not living as their true nature. What this man said is, this is what causes you to die. And you have generations of that in there. Who told you that literally, I mean, you go back 4 generations, and that's 31 lives. Who told you that you have every thought, every feeling, every reality structured within your structure of the previous 30 people in your generations? Did anybody tell you that? The thoughts, the feelings, the attitudes, the perceptual constructs of mom and dad, and mom and dad's mom and dad, and their moms? Did anybody tell you that? This book called Scripture is not about theology. Here's where it's about genetics. It's about physics. It's about physiology. It's about psychology. It's about how this energy system called life works. But the Greeks didn't want us to know that. You'll notice the Greeks, you know, they had these gods that raped their own mothers, murdered their own children. Pretty heavy-duty group of folks. So through that filter came this insane interpretation of something was just meant to help you to determine how to live your life. So if you've got generations of energies that are off the mark in there, you're in trouble. And of course, you think about 3 to 4 generations, and where did the previous fourth generation back get their thoughts, their feelings, their realities? But from the previous generation and the previous. And so what this work ultimately is inviting you to do, and I'll say that having developed this and worked with this for almost 50 years now, when people are first introduced to this, they get it on a certain level. But it isn't until people work with it for 5 to 10 years that they really grasp what it's about, what it really means. And what we're inviting each of you to do is to develop a skill unheard of in our culture. And that is the skill of being able to delve inside of your own energy system, to learn to collapse projections of untoward energies, move into and literally decode what's in the cell. Literally, that mind energy comes in, lands on a receptor site, is integrated into the cell. The skill is to pull that out of the cell and throw it away. That's forgiveness. And to be able to literally develop the skill to go down to the point where you literally are sensitive enough to the energies contained within your structure that you can go back into the generational patterns and pull the neuropeptides out of the genes that create that pattern, that create this inclination that's activated in certain ways in your life. So we're inviting you to develop a set of skills. And it doesn't happen on day one or day two or day 10 or day 20. You know, I have people like, you know, oh, I got $5 in 5 minutes. Tell me everything you know, Michael. No, that's not how it works. I use an example of that. And I say this by way of hopefully inspiring you to really take. I'm suggesting you do at least two worksheets a day in each assignment as they come, as we go through this intensive. And if you do, through the period of the 14 weeks, you'll integrate it into your life as a habit, and it will become yours for life. That's one of the benefits of doing this intensive this way, as opposed to people coming to Heartland for 16 days and doing it all, but then taking it back to their lives and trying to integrate it into their daily lives. It's a challenge. But ultimately, what we're inviting you to do is to develop the skills of being able to go into the deepest parts of your structure, access what's there and what doesn't belong, to literally be able to throw it away, to remove it. And what does that look like? What are we capable of? And I use an example. Michael J., my son, is a computer nerd. And when he was about 15, he decided he wanted to learn about computers. And I had a student friend in Kansas City who was a former NASA computer scientist. And he's someone that I've worked with for several years. He'd done my work, and we just became buds over the years. And so I called Graham and I said, hey, Michael J. wants to learn about computers, and I know you've got a computer school aside from about four computer businesses. Can Michael come and work with you? He said, sure. And Michael J., of course, was raised at Heartland. And thank you to Fran Tyner, because Fran was this the first two or three years that we were at Heartland, and Michael J. was, you know, I guess he was about 8 or 9, and he became Fran's tail. He went everywhere Fran went, and Fran just had this ability to do anything with his hands. So Michael learned that skill from him. And so he ended up going and living at Graham's home and doing kind of an exchange with him for room and board while he was going to school and studying computers. Actually, over a period of a couple of years, when Michael J.'s stereo system left the house, we knew he'd gone to Kansas City, and that was it. But I tell the story because there was a point where I had bought a new computer. And when I got that computer up and running, got it online, you know, this is back when you pushed the button, it went beep, 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 all these tones, and you got this crawling thing that happened. Well, it didn't work properly. So I called the company, and I don't know, I spent 2, 3, 4, 5 hours on with technical support. They couldn't get the computer working. So I said, well, pack it up and send it back to us. We'll fix it. So I packed it up, sent it back. 2 weeks later, I got the computer back. It's ostensibly fixed. I plug it in. Same problem. Exact same thing. So I got on the phone with the computer with tech support again, go through the whole routine. They can't get it working. So I don't bug Graham because he's a really busy guy. He's got 3 or 4 businesses. And so I picked up the phone and I called and said, Graham, I apologize for bugging you, but I got a problem. Can you help me? And so I explained what had happened, and, you know, I sent the computer back and they couldn't fix it. And, you know, what do? It's a brand new computer. He says, okay, well, go to a C prompt. At that point, I was a little bit ignorant of computers. I said, what's a C prompt? And I followed his directions. He said, well, put in a string of letters and hit a return. So I put in a string of letters, hit a return. Read to me what it says. And I read it to him. And he says, okay, type in this string of characters and hit a return. Read from what it says. So I put that in, hit a return, and I read it to him. He says, okay, your computer's fixed. What? Your computer's fixed. Now, come on, Graham. I mean, I sent it back to them. We've spent hours on the phone. Michael, your computer is fixed. Guess what? My computer was fixed. Now, the company that built the system couldn't troubleshoot what Graham did literally in 3 minutes on the phone. That's called having brain cells for something. Are there challenges in your life? Are there hostilities and fears that you can't seem to overcome? Are there disorders and diseases that just don't seem resolvable? Well, as I said, 5 to 10 years of engaging. And people say, well, that's a long time. I don't know if I want to. Well, what else is there to do? There is no other path to this end result than doing your work. You know, in the ancient times, they wanted an instant fix too. Well, $5, 5 minutes. What did they say to them? You can't storm the gates. You can't do it. It takes doing your work. You have this body-mind unit. There are generations and generations and generations of untoward energies in there. And you've just got to clean it up. Now, I've spent the last half century studying how to do that, how it works, what that all means. And this is my end result. It was actually the thing that inspired me to take it to the next level. My son just turned 40. Was his birth. And when he came into the world, it was just like so awesome and delivered him, caught him with my hands. And it was just so amazing. And then I looked at the world at that time and it's like, well, if somebody doesn't do something, there isn't going to be a world for this little one to grow up in. And this is what I did. And so I invite you to be on the team and be part of the process and key into how this process of healing works, what it really means. And the core of the forgiveness process, we're not actually going to get into doing the worksheet tonight, but we're going to get into what the core of the forgiveness process is. And from there, you can tap into, and you know, you can go to our website, or pardon me, to your phone's app store, and just type in the words Heartland, H-E-A-R-T-L-A-N-D, one word, Aramaic, A-R-A-M-A-I-C, forgiveness. And you'll be looking at the world's, as far as I know, only forgiveness app. You can do the worksheet. There are two different versions of it on that, on your phone now, once you download that. And or you can go to whyagain.org, and in the upper left-hand corner of the page, it says start here. Click that button. It'll walk you through literally 50 years of what it took to understand how this process of forgiveness works. And what I'm going to explain to you right now, I didn't understand until I had worked with this for about 35 years. It took that to decode from the Aramaic and come to understand all of the aspects of how this comes together, the physiology, the physics, the psychology, the genetics of it, and how it all works. But suffice to say, in its shortest form at this moment, perception is the output of your mind. It's made of 9 bits of data. If your perception is fueled by any form of hostility or fear, you have a problem because you are suffering from degraded perception. And your life will never go the way you want it to go while your perception is degraded. Underlying degraded perception is generations and generations and generations, pardon me, our generations of unresolved hostility and fear. The thing that drives this whole process, and you'll notice in your life in general, I mean, unless you're just a naturally nasty person, excuse me. If your persona is that degraded that you're a naturally nasty person, you'll notice that as long as everybody's doing what you want them to do, you're a pretty happy camper. But when someone, yourself or someone else, is not fulfilling a goal that you hold for them, that's when you go into hostility and fear, degraded perception, and untoward behavior. Why? Well, how does all that work? Well, here's what happens. Obviously, if there are 10,000 brain cells firing, and this is the most quoted piece of psychological research, and was done back in the 60s, if I remember correctly, this is the most quoted piece of research in psychological history. 9 bits of data, 10,000 brain cells fired. Now, there's other research that's come up since then that says, no, it's 13, it's 12, it doesn't matter. The point is, we get to see a little tiny fragment of what's really going on within us. And obviously, something has to determine which 9 bits of data your mind is going to use to build your perception. Something has to make that determination. What is it? The driver for that whole process is your goals. When you load a goal in the mind through resonance, everything associated with the frequency of that goal. Remember, everything is frequency. You know, I actually don't speak words. I've never spoken a word in my life, and neither of you. We call it words, but actually, I have a little flap of skin in my throat, and I know how to blow air over it so that it creates these things that we call words. But what's really happening is this air moving out causes air molecules to move. The air molecules moving cause a little drum inside of your ear to move, and that drum moving sets up an electrical frequency, and nothing is communicated by that except frequency. No light, no sound, no nothing goes in there or here. What goes in is frequency. And then that frequency causes brain cells to fire. And now your whole history, including your whole genetic history through the last 1,000 generations, is set into activity through the law of resonance. Whatever that goal resonates in you is going to be the information that is recruited by that goal to produce the perception, which includes your attitudes and your behaviors. If you don't like the behavior that you're doing, you know, we hear about the alcoholic that got drunk and did crazy stuff. And the next morning when they wake up, they are so repentant. Oh, that's so terrible. I will never do that again. And they really mean they're never going to do it again. But guess what? Next time they get drunk, they'll do it again. Remember we talked about inhibitors earlier? What's the first thing that happens with alcohol? Excessive amounts of alcohol knock out inhibitors. And now all the generational patterns that were never allowed, they were always shut down, they were always inhibited, will come into play and people do crazy stuff. And much as they feel sorry the next morning and swear they're never going to do it, unless they go in and clean up these generational patterns, they're going to do it the next time the circumstance warrants it. And so goals are the driver for this process of billions of bits of information moving in the world, billions of bits moving in us, and 9 bits end up producing the world we experience, the thoughts we think, the feelings we feel, and the energy we engage in. And this process is designed to be fueled by active present love. That's the power supply that it's designed to work with. Now, does anybody have a device in your home, your office, your shop, your car, your business that works really well when you unplug it? Human perception is designed to be fueled by human life. It's designed to be fueled by active present love. If your perception is fueled by hostility or fear, then you're not even human. Just because one has a human form does not mean they are human. Remember holding the newborn? Go back and hold that newborn child. Notice when you hold the newborn, what serenity, what peace, what sweetness, what the presence of love is like. Then ask yourself a question. Is the newborn loving me, or is the newborn love? My offering is, the newborn is the active presence of love, and so are you. If the active presence of love isn't active in your physiology, then there's no human life, because it is love that is human life. Remember Yeshua said, I come to bring you life? You look at his whole body of work, and the whole thing is about how do you get rid of the hostility or fear, and how do you fuel your mind by the active presence of love? Now, it's a two-part process. One part of the process is the dissolution of the generational patterns that do not belong. That's called forgiveness. Forget about ever forgiving anybody ever again. And it always amazes me, because I've had people who have been around my work 10, 15, 20 years, and they'll still talk about how well I forgave them. Stop. Never forgive anybody for anything. if you choose to pardon someone, you know, they did something crazy and you go, I can let that go. I'm going to let it go. I'll pardon you. I'll let you off the hook for that. That's done. But if you call that forgiveness, you won't actually do the next level, which is go inside yourself and remove and clean up the untoward energies that never belong within a human structure. So forgiveness is about the removal of what never belonged. That's half of the process. And the other half of the process is the integration of active love into every cell. To literally create a space in this form where love actively shows up in physiology. Now, the short form of the forgiveness process, and again, please use the radio show, ask questions. The short form of the forgiveness process is, the word forgive in Aramaic is shebag, and it literally translates from Aramaic to cancel. Now, what is it that I cancel? Do I cancel you? Well, that's murder. Probably not a good idea. Do I cancel myself? Well, no, that's suicide. Let's let that one go. But what in every circumstance where I have upset or discernment's going on, that means there's an untoward energy moving in my physiology. If I'm going to come out of my denial, what is it that I can cancel to change that whole process? When I cancel my goal, the perception generated as a result of that goal collapses. When it collapses, I now have a clean and open space within my mind where these underlying energies can surface. Because when I cancel a goal and collapse a perception, what happens is a pathway is opened into the unconscious or the dissociated content. And what I've dissociated from, depending on my level of willingness, what I've dissociated from will start to come upward to awareness. Now, when I say awareness, it might just be awareness of the energy moving. And it might be specific memories of things that have happened. It's not necessary to go back and remember each dark, dirty, nasty thing that happened in your life. And it's not about laying on the couch and, you know, examining what happened for 30 years until you find that thing. It's about living in and as the active presence of love, making a commitment to that. And as you walk through life, the next piece of work you're ready to do, resonance will bring somebody to you that will resonate what you need to deal with. If you keep it hidden, then you'll only get this surface projection and you'll think it's somebody else. When you cancel the goal, you collapse that perception. It took me 35 years to learn this piece of information. And I understand why the Greeks turned it into pardoning, letting other people off the hook. I understand it fully, because until you've got all these pieces, you know the physics, you know the physiology, you know the high energy, until you put all those pieces together, canceling a perfectly good goal does not make any sense at all. Gee, I just want that person to cherish me. And they're raging at me. Why would I cancel my need to be cherished? Because I'm in terror. Oh, so my physiology is producing terror because I want to be cherished. Oh, so Michael, what you're saying is what you now understand about me is that in my file on being cherished, there's terror. Oh, okay, I see. So if I cancel my goal for them to cherish me, my projection on them collapses and it opens a pathway into all this terror that's stored within my brain cell structure and maybe the terror that's stored from 30 generations ago that needs to be unwound. Oh, now I'm starting to see what forgiveness is as I cancel the goal. Now, I have a 9-bit processor, that's what we're going to call it for the sake of whatever term we're going to use. If I've got something that's been going on in my bloodline for 25 or 200 generations, and I can process 9 bits at a time, what chance do I have? It's impossible. I mean, it's silly to even try. Fortunately, this man Yeshua understood another major piece of information. And that was that at creation, There was a power put in us that in Aramaic was called Ruka Dekudsha. The Greeks translated these words as the Holy Spirit. It's nothing about a disembodied spirit being in the term Ruka Dekudsha in Aramaic. In Aramaic, those terms speak of a feminine elemental force in us that undoes the effects of our errors and teaches us the truth. So when I become willing enough, I will literally, I mean, one of my best examples for, I don't know, 35 years or more. If you were in my workshop 35 years, or, well, 15 years ago, these weren't the words at the top of the board. This word was suppress. Literally, as I'm sitting and I'm making some changes to the worksheet, and the one you see on the website now or in the app is probably at least version 3020, I was sitting doing some work with it, and literally I'm told inside my head, Michael, it's not suppression. That's not clear enough. It's dissociation. What do you mean dissociation? It's not just that you've hidden it away. It's that it's no longer yours. It's gone. You can't change it. When you understand that denial, thinking or speaking as though something outside of you is the cause of this that's in you, then you have to believe that, hide the real process that's happening inside of you. This genius, Yeshua, genius. I mean, how did he come up with this? I don't know. But here's what he showed us. Cancel the goal. Collapse the perception. Perception drops in on its root. You've now got access to the hidden part of your mind. Bring it forward in the presence of love, and then there's a super processor that is available to you. In Aramaic, it was called Ruka Dekudsha. She, a feminine elemental force in us that undoes the effects of our errors and teaches us the truth. So at the point where I cancel the goal and collapse, I may open so much that I'm so overwhelmed. This is part of the whole flood idea. You know, I'm so overwhelmed. There's just so much to move. How do I do it? I connect with Ruka. What is Ruka? In the original Aramaic, they never said anything about God sending out his spirit. What it says is the Creator sent out his breath. We have access to this phenomenal super processor called Ruka Dekudsha. She will, if you invite her to, undo the effects of your errors and teach you the truth. Now, if you've still got a use for one of your lies, well, I just want to keep this little bit of hostility back here so I don't need to protect myself, then she's not going to touch your hostility. It's yours. Hang out with it all you need, all you want. But when you're willing to surrender, when you're ready to really let it all go, she will process you right down to your genetic toast.